You are listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the Podcast Network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, December 16th, 2009. This is episode 110, The Medium is the Message. It's time again for another Wells Tech Podcast. Thanks all of you listeners for tuning in once again. And as usual, joining me via Skype from Sleepy Eye, Minnesota, Sally Draper. Morning, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Here we are, rapidly progressing through the Advent season, and I have a question for you this morning.
Oh, you didn't prep me on the questions.
I like to surprise you with that, little okay. Pop quiz.
That's right. Keeps it more extemporaneous.
Yeah. I'm just wondering what your favorite taste of Christmas are. We're deep into the holiday munching time period, and last night we had the joy of making one of our very favorites. It's like Christmas has arrived when we have this special candy. We call it Martha Washington's, and they're these chocolate balls with confectioner's sugar and coconut and pecans and condensed milk.
Sounds really good for you.
Yeah, no calories. We remove those when we make it. What about you? Do you have any favorites?
I do. My mom always used to make Spritz cookies. You know what those are?
No, I haven't heard of
them. I don't even really know what's in them, but everybody's seen them. They're pretty small, and they come in green and pink and yellow, different kinds of shapes. I'm sure they're real good for me as well, but my mom always made them, and then now my sister-in-law, Renee, every Christmas gives me a tin full. So Christmas would not be right without a tin full of Spritz cookies. So I'm expecting those under the tree this year as well. So
that's funny how those taste trigger lots of memories, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yeah. All right, I guess we should talk about technology, huh?
Okay. Yes.
And this is one of those topics, Sally, that I think you were a little nervous in going into. We're reviewing a book, not reviewing it, but I think discussing and working our way through it, called The Hidden Power of Electronic Culture by Shane Hipps, How Media Shapes Faith, the Gospel, and Church. A number of weeks ago, we went through the first chapter, which was pretty easy sledding, I'd hope you would agree.
Yeah, I think I handled that okay.
Okay, but now we're into chapter two. Yes, perceiving the powers that shape us. I brought this book up as a suggested topic that we go through. We had been through. Our longtime listeners know that we've gone through a previous book called "Here Comes Everybody," basically a book about social media and some of the tools around that. This is a little bit more theologically focused and perhaps directly applicable to congregations as they consider how media shapes us. And to be honest, before I read this book, I really didn't give it a second thought. And there's some pretty deep thoughts here as we think about how it's not just the message, but it's also the channel over which that message is preached or taught that does make a difference. And that's kind of the topic of this particular chapter. And maybe a good way to get this conversation kickstarted is just to read the opening paragraph here, a couple paragraphs, and kind of set the stage for what we're going to be talking about here. But let me just do a quick read here. And those of you that are following along at home, we're on chapter 2, page 29, and I would really encourage you to grab a copy of the book. It's not that long, but I think you'll find it valuable, especially if you're a regular podcast listener, to kind of work through it with us. So this is what he opens up with in chapter 2. And the quotation here, and there's a Rick Warren quotation, "Our message must never change, but the way we deliver that message must be constantly updated to reach each new generation. I think that's a quote that many of us have heard before. He says, in this quotation here, Rick Warren reiterates one of the most popular assumptions in the church today. The methods always change, but the message stays the same. This is the North Star by which the vast majority of Christians have navigated the perpetual changes caused by blustery cultural winds. It guides those who huddle to protect new methods, media, and technologies, all of which have been adopted to amplify the reach and effectiveness of the gospel message. This saying also serves to deflect the attacks of those who cry heresy whenever a new form is introduced. As long as we hold on to the unchanging gospel message, it doesn't matter what medium or method is used to communicate it. And then just turning the page on page 30, however, the truth embedded in the second quote at the head of this chapter, which is from Marshall McLuhan, the medium is the message, reveals the subtle but significant error in the first quote. McLuhan's words tell an important truth. Whenever methods or media change, the message automatically changes along with them. Interesting, huh?
Yeah, and definitely some food for thought. As I was getting into this chapter, I felt a little overwhelmed when I read this introduction. I mean, I hear what they say. I kind of was agreeing a little bit with Rick Warren and mm-hmm. that concept of, you know, holding true to the gospel.
Message must never change, right? And
that's
we would agree with that, right?
Yes. But then, you know, as you begin to get into McLuhan's writings and things, and we'll talk more about who Marshall McLuhan was, you begin to see and discern the fact that the medium does have a power of its own. Mm-hmm. You know, the way you deliver the message affects the receipt of that message.
Right. Yeah, I know you and I have talked about this on a number of occasions in different contexts where we talk about the message never changing, but the methods need to change. The channels need to change, and they can change. But I don't know we've ever thought through on this level, certainly, what that actually means and how that affects the message. And the point here is just that. So really the next paragraph really says the purpose of the chapter. The purpose of the chapter is to help to determine, develop a kind of radar by which to detect the hidden effects of media so we can discern the ways our media and methods are what he calls forming God's people, or essentially how it affects God's people, how it affects our faith. And that's the point of the chapter. Then he jumps right into, and he's a big fan of Marshall McLuhan. Marshall McLuhan was a, I don't know what you'd call him, Sally. He was a philosopher, a sociologist, some would call him.
He was an English professor,
right? He was, yeah, I think by education and by vocation. Was an English professor, lived in Canada, went to Oxford, wrote about, and this is what he's most notably known for, is he wrote about media and pop culture, mostly in the 1960s. And, you know, watching a couple YouTube videos which we'll post, he was kind of viewed as a nut, is my sense, that he was really dismissed, and some of his ideas were branded as kooky, because he coined the phrase, the medium is the message, which seems like an overstatement.
Right, but I think what we've found now in our modern times is that he was way ahead of his time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his thinking and his philosophy was a picture, almost prophetically, of what's happening in this digital age that we're now a part of.
Right. So based on some of those thoughts, and then what Shane does is he takes those and essentially applies them to the church and theology and how we preach and teach, he walks us through, and I think in a fairly understandable fashion, what we're talking about when we say media. Because I think when you and I think of media, when I was in school, multimedia was the projector, you know, that we use, the slide projector, or the movie projector, the reel-to-reel projector. But
the
it's a little bit different.
You got to turn it every time it beeped on the audio recording.
That's right.
That kind of projector.
That kind of projector. I was very proud to be the media guy in my junior high. That meant I got to run around to different classes and thread the film projector.
A lot of
people think that that's media, and that is media. Uh-huh. But the definition here, and if you're following along at home, I think he starts talking about it on page 34. Is a lot broader than that, isn't it?
Yeah, it really does shift our way of thinking. But basically, he says media is anything that's an extension of ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
So we are who we are, and anything that extends that reach, for instance, the telephone extends an example, amplifies our voice and our hearing.
Right.
That is media then.
Mm-hmm.
Glasses that extend the eye's ability to focus is media.
Yep.
And even
a little bit more abstract, talking
right,
about
physical.
Yeah, when you create, let's say, an outline, a lot of us do outlining, that extends our ability to organize thought. So these are all what he would call media, extensions of ourselves. One of the YouTube videos that we post is an interview with, I think we can post the one with Shane Hipps too, where he talks about the gospel. And it's not just the book, but we are the gospel. We're the messengers. We are the media through which the gospel is pronounced. We are, and that's very biblical, that he has entrusted the gospel to us. And if we don't speak it, if we don't share it, if we don't essentially extend that written word, it just gets locked up and stays locked up in that book called the Bible. And the gospel does not extend throughout the world. So interesting thoughts, and you have to think about it for a little bit. And when we talk about media in this book, this is what we're really talking about. And if you don't get that, it gets really confusing later on.
Right. I think at some point he calls it us dumbed down because we don't make this realization. So when you begin to think of media as an extension of ourselves, it changes your perception mm-hmm. of the power of media.
Right. Then he goes into a couple of examples, and he goes back to the classics, and we've talked about the story of Narcissus before, and I think actually McLuhan loved to reference this story as well, because it does illustrate the problem. Remember, the story of Narcissus was that he essentially, at least the way the story goes, is he stumbled across a pool of water, looked in the pool, saw himself, fell in love with that image, and couldn't take his eyes off it, didn't want to leave the pool, and ultimately died of starvation. So it's a story of self-love. The problem was, as is stated here in the book, the problem was not that he fell in love with himself, however, but that he didn't recognize his image. He didn't understand the medium. So when he looked in that pool, he didn't discern the fact that this media was just a reflection of himself. And then he quotes, "When we fail to perceive media as extensions of ourselves, they take on godlike characteristics and we become their servants." And that's really the point, of the story of Narcissus, as it relates at least to media. He didn't understand what the media was telling him, right?
Right. And we don't want to let the media rule us,
mm-hmm.
So having this understanding of what media really is going to allow us to have power over it, because
right.
we'll understand that it's just an extension of ourselves.
Right. And then by contrast, he references another fairly well-known myth, the myth of Perseus and Medusa, and most of us are well aware of that story, where Perseus was called on to kill Medusa, but nobody could look at Medusa, or they would die. So what he did was he used a highly polished shield to look at Medusa. So through that shield, he could look at the monster, and then ultimately kill her. So by contrast, he kind of understood the media. He understood, in this case, the mirror and what its effect was. And the quote here is, "We are returned to being owners of technology rather than those who are owned by it." So there's the compare and contrast between Narcissus and the story of Perseus.
Yeah, and, you know, he makes the extension here about people. Maybe they say they're slaves to their cell phone or slaves to some kind of technology. But when we understand that that technology is an extension of ourselves, we might say we're slaves to our ears and mm-hmm. to the voice and that kind of thing. And understanding what really is, you know, doing the communicating within ourselves or whatever.
Yep. Then he jumps into really kind of a deep dive into this concept that the medium is the message. And this is really kind of where it gets down to it and gets pretty practical for us. When we think about the tools that we're going to use, we need to think through what that says about the message itself. And then he quotes McLuhan here again. And I'm those of you that are following along, I'm on page 38. He says, "Our conventional response to all media, namely that it is how they are used that counts, is the numb stance of the technological idiot. The content of a medium is like the juicy piece of meat carried by the burglar to distract the watchdog of the mind."
It's like the old bait and switch kind of thing,
right?
That we're, you know, we're using this medium and we're saying it doesn't have any power, but it actually does have power.
Mm-hmm.
It is, you know, the thing that's conveying the message, and it's very important in that process.
So the application here, let's say, let's apply it to the preacher. So a pastor prepares a sermon. If he's not in tune with the medium, if he's just looking at it as a tool, as a neutral thing, in the communications process, he's kind of missing the boat. So he's failing to consider, let's say, how preaching with images differs than preaching with words. You know, is there a difference? Is the message changed to a certain extent by using one over and against the other?
And I think, you know, it would be very fair to say that the medium does have an effect on the message.
Mm-hmm.
It does affect us and our walk with faith.
Right.
Walk of faith.
Right. You know, we could probably translate that into the internet too. We kind of miss the power of the internet that alters the meaning. What he says is alters the meaning of truth in our culture. And I guess it's pretty easy to see at this point that this new medium of the internet has altered our culture and how people view things. Especially truth. You know, what is truth? We talk about Wikipedia, we talk about bloggers, we talk about how news is distributed, and by extension or by translation, faith is in the mix there too.
Absolutely. So then we progress to the end of the chapter, and he gives us some real more concrete things to judge media by,
mm-hmm.
basically. There are four laws of media that he explains at the end of the chapter that basically you can use as a standard to kind of evaluate media. The first of which is extension. And we mentioned this early on in the conversation, Martin, that media is an extension of ourselves. And so as you look at media, any type of media, you should be able to identify what is being extended and
how.
Yeah,
what does the medium extend? What, you know, every medium enhances something, it amplifies something, it extends, you know, to carry on McLuhan's thought, it extends some human capacity. And then he gives some more examples. Let's say the camera extends the eye. And it doesn't always have to be human characteristics either. It can be other media. So, for instance, the telephone extends the telegraph. One kind of interesting area that he explored was smoke detectors extending the sense of smell. So the question is, what does the medium extend? They all extend something, or there would be no reason to have the medium, right?
Right, and even in the smoke detector example, it extends our sense of safety.
Security, yeah, exactly.
So, you know, some some non-concrete concepts there for sure.
Right. So remember, the purpose of this chapter was to kind of help our radar looking at media in a little bit different way. So these four tools that he's going to provide are helping us do that. So the first one was, what does the medium extend? The second one, what does the medium make obsolete? Which is kind of interesting, because when you think of new media, it's really replacing something old media.
Right. The example he gave was the automobile replacing the horse and buggy. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean the horse and buggy no longer exist or isn't used, but the purpose of the horse and buggy and the place of the horse and buggy in society are completely shifted. They're more of a romantic or nostalgic, you know, placement instead of their
purpose has changed. Right.
That they had in the past. I got a kick out of this one. It reminded me of, you know, that concept of when you choose to do something, you're also choosing not to do something else. You know, there's give and take, mm-hmm. and the same is true with media. As you adopt new media, that means that something is becoming obsolete in the process.
Right. And this becomes a really important point later on in the book, because there's a choice going on here where you're using some kind of media, you're replacing something else. So that's law number two. What does the medium obsolete? The third one, Sally?
This one was interesting. What does the medium reverse into? And I didn't quite get that terminology at first, but basically, if you take it to the extreme, what does the medium turn into on the opposite end or mm-hmm. on the extreme end? And the example he gave was, you know, automobiles again. Automobiles were meant to speed up our transportation over the horse and buggy day, but if you get too speedy in an automobile, traffic jams and accidents.
Or too many automobiles, right? So mm-hmm. you take the medium and you use it too much or use it in excess, the negatives sometimes outweigh the positives. So he does admit that this law of reversal can often be the most difficult to predict or anticipate, because when you're thinking of using a medium, you're thinking of it only really in positive terms. You can think of social media and social networks, very positive effects of social media, where you can connect with friends. But then you can take that to an extreme, as I was thinking through this, you know, social media to an extreme, you're sharing so much that your friendships become shallower and you almost have, you give up privacy. So there's a medium that's reversing into something very different.
I can see this being a real powerful analytical process for a technology or a communications team within a congregation as they look at different media or whatever, you know, in their planning phases to be proactive and actually go to that reversal, mm-hmm. you know, and consider that concept. Hopefully it would never get to that extreme level, but let's be proactive and think about what could happen.
Right, exactly. And then we're going to apply this to all kinds of different things within the church later on in the book. One would be the use of audiovisuals during a sermon. And he's going to walk us through that later with all these four laws. What's the worst that could happen? Interesting thoughts. And then the final law, that we mentioned that there were four, is what does the medium retrieve? And I was, as I was reading through this section, I was reminded of Solomon's words in Ecclesiastes, there's nothing new under the sun. So every kind of medium harkens back to something in the past. So in other words, there is really no such thing as a completely new technology.
Right, so we can look back on that history and learn from it and predict our future as we adopt new media. The mm-hmm. example he gave was that email retrieves or follows the same cycle as the introduction of the telegraph did in the 1800s. Mm-hmm. And so we can, you know, look at the societal changes that occurred because of the introduction of the telegraph and predict what will occur with the infiltration of email, for example.
Yep. Very intriguing concept here, and I think the applications are going to be numerous here as well, where we think about the advent of text messaging or those impacts on culture and how other things influence that. Often when I talk about technology and the use of websites and the instant communication mechanisms, I refer back to the printing press and how that changed society dramatically. Or even before that, with the Pax Romana and the extension of the Roman roads of the time, and how that sped the spread of the gospel, and how that affected society, and how people became much more mobile because of that. Interesting thoughts, and all of these are going to come back into play. And then on the last page, or near the end of the chapter, he gives an example of the laws of media applied to surveillance cameras. So if you get the book, take a look at that section. I think there's some, you know, kind of brings it all into focus there, so to speak, for the person who wants to take this a little bit more seriously and begin to examine how you're using medium, even things that we're taking for granted now that we think, well, they've brought us a lot of benefit, like websites and emails and electronic newsletters. I think we ought to probably look critically at every one of those and determine, you know, how they apply here, how these four laws of media apply.
So what he did in this chapter, Martin, was basically lay down the building blocks for the entire rest of the book. If I understand correctly, then we have the definitions, we have the laws, and the rest of the book is going to take and apply that to the church and look at it in more detail. And I must admit, I'm a little anxious to get to the rest of the book now, because it's not quite so intimidating as I thought it would be.
Yeah, the next chapter he's going to talk about printing and how that has affected the quote-unquote modern church, and makes some interesting insights that I hadn't really thought through, where he gets into phonetic writing versus symbols, and he compares English to Chinese characters and so on and so forth. So grab the book, The Hidden Power of Electronic Culture, from Shane Hipps. It's available on Amazon. I noticed it was available on the Kindle as well, so if you're a Kindle user, grab it for that. It's a little bit cheaper there. And probably in the new year, one of the Wednesdays in January, we'll be revisiting and looking at Chapter 3. Good stuff. Wasn't so bad, was it, Sally?
I survived. Wonder how many more chapters are there.
Yeah, I hope we haven't lost all of our listeners either. No. So, but
I think it's worth considering for
it
sure.
Is, absolutely.
8 chapters total.
Yep. It's a quick read. All right. Ministry resources. We've got a couple of things to share.
Well, actually, all of it around the concept of the copyright community website, which is a really cool website you discovered, and focusing on writings on copyright issues for the Christian arts community.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if there's one question I get more than any other, used to be a lot of questions about websites. Now it's kind of evolved into, well, what about copyrights? How do we deal with copyrights for images? How do we deal with copyrights for video, for streaming, audio and video, all those things? And I'm happy to say there's some of these resources becoming more and more well known. This is a blog that we're going to put a link to from the copyright community. That's I think very well done. And as these things come across, just a reminder to our listeners: there is a section on the WellsTech Wiki, WellsTechWiki.wells.net, about copyright, which includes a number of blog posts, a number of resources, number of things to consider. That's probably one of the more growing and active pages on the wiki. There's probably 7, 8, 9 entries. I just uploaded a couple of documents there about gaining permissions for photo usage for adults and children. So if you want to look at some media consent forms, they are there as well. So that's wellstechwiki.wells.net. If you've got stuff, this is not just for us to share with you, but for you to share with everybody else, all of our other listeners, and anybody else who visits the page. Go ahead and get an account there. It's free, and add your stuff. You know how wikis work.
Yeah, and I think this is an exciting area to see develop. It's one of those things that was really gray, really hard to put your finger on copyright permissioning and things like that. And now as there's more and more documentation available and more resources, it's nice to see it firming up and getting a lot more concrete of what you can and cannot do.
Yeah, I still think there's a lot of gray there, and that's mostly because the law is not really caught up yet with the internet and how things move, how fast things move in a digital world. But certainly what we know is now, I think, in more clearer terms. And the good part is, with all these resources, is they apply specifically to the nonprofit or the church or school context. And that's important because it's very difficult to sometimes apply legalities to the church because they're not always the same, because there are some nuances there that are a little bit different. So these resources really kind of focus in on, you know, what does this mean for the church? So take a look at those. Sally, we got some news in tech too, don't we?
Oh, we
Busy
do.
Busy weekend news.
Things going on this week. First up, we wanted to talk about the Ustream application just released for the iPhone and iPod Touch. Ustream Mobile is available, and we'll have a link to the iTunes store where you can get the free application. On their press release blog, they say Ustream makes history with first live broadcaster for iPhone. And it is pretty historic to have the power of live video in your hand with a small iPhone or iPod Touch.
Now, is that for the 3G or the 3GS, or do you have to have the 3GS for that? Do you know?
I think it's for either and for Wi-Fi as well. So you can stream the video down to your viewer on your iPhone or iPod Touch. I believe it's for either.
Okay.
And then, actually I'm looking at the specs right here, and it does say 3G, 3GS, 2G, iPod Touch.
Oh, no kidding. Wow.
And they do have Android and Nokia applications as well for the broadcaster. So there's basically three components to this. You can broadcast live video from your phone. So if you have a video-capable phone, you can actually go live with the video that you're taking there, which is just amazing.
There's going to be fewer and fewer events that are not captured by somebody on some kind of device, I'm thinking.
Yeah. Next up, you can view things. So if there's live video going on, for instance, here at St. John's, we broadcast our weekly worship services each Sunday, and we'll actually be broadcasting on Christmas Eve, which is a really popular one for people to be able to see the children's Christmas Eve,
thing.
And people can watch it now on their iPhone, or I believe that works on the Android as well, the viewer. And then finally, you can record video and upload it directly to Ustream and, you know, go ahead and do your tweeting and Facebooking about it, even to YouTube with your mobile phone with their application. So lots of functionality there. I personally haven't tried it out yet, but I will have it going by this Sunday to test out our worship stream and see if it's working for us.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. The next news we wanted to share was that Thunderbird has a brand new release, Thunderbird 3. So this is a major release for Thunderbird. And Thunderbird is Mozilla's email client.
Open source, right?
Kind of a competitor to Microsoft Outlook, and totally free. And the major updates to Thunderbird 3 are that it has tabbed type browsing of your email. So when you open an email, it's not in a new window, it's in a new tab, similar to the tabs in Firefox or in Internet Explorer. They've improved their searching, and there's an email archive function included as well. So a very major release for Thunderbird. I downloaded it yesterday. It's about 8.5 meg and a nice update. So if you're a Thunderbird user, you'll definitely want to check that out.
Okay, good.
And then finally, we'll include a link to an article from CNN. I love these trendy type articles. What's the web's next big thing is the title of this article. And they're just looking at based on a conference in France, some of the things that people are looking at for the future. And they list six or seven of them there: NetVibes, Blue, Kiwi, With Things, Tic-Tac-Doo, and more. So different project management and, I don't know, social networking type applications, and they're just kind of wondering what the next thing to take off is going to be. So quick little read, but maybe give you some insight into the future.
Very good.
Yeah.
Moving on to our picks of the week.
Well, for my pick of the week, I'm just going to feature something pretty basic, but I think really useful, and that is Google Sites templates. Martin, you and I have talked about Google Sites. We have a couple of congregations that have sent us examples of Google Sites for their intranet, and certainly with Google Apps, you can integrate Google Sites into your Google Apps installation as well. Mm-hmm. What's new with Google Sites is that they just recently launched the ability to create templates of an entire website. And they have several that they've developed themselves, or you can use a lot of the ones that the community has shared as well. So if you go and set up a Google site, which is basically a free website using your Google account, they give you a choice of templates, and they have things like project wikis, classroom sites, family sites, team sites, and that kind of thing. And then they have more. And it's a huge collection of different Google sites. And I even found, you know, church site templates and things like that. So if you're looking for a place to start a new website, I think Google Sites would be a great consideration. And then, you know, added to that now is that you get these templates. And what's neat about it is you don't have to use everything that it comes with. You can delete the things that you don't like. But it gives you a lot of ideas of how to set up a good project website or a good classroom website. And so those things kind of all come built into it. It has a design to it. It has specific pages that it's recommending that you would include in your website. So a fantastic way to jumpstart a website for a project or a team or even for your own personal family use.
Yep, and free and I think very useful. You're using it for a project that you're working on, and I found it, you sent me the link, and I couldn't believe this was Google Sites because it was so nicely laid out. And Google Sites had, I think, been the ugly stepdaughter of Google for some time. They hadn't done a lot with it. And now with these templates applied, you can see some more of its usefulness. I'm still thinking they need a little bit more to do, or a little more work to do with integrating with some of their other tools, with Google Docs and so on and so forth, because they're still somewhat disconnected. But this is a great step in the right direction, and I think it makes it useful for our churches and schools, especially for managing projects or creating intranet sites. I think there's some value there.
Absolutely.
My pick is Chrome. Google Chrome is a browser that's been around for, I don't know, maybe a year now, something like that. And they still think it's in beta, as most things from Google are. But they've recently released Chrome extensions. And those of you that are Firefox users, you know, you say, well, that's no big deal. But it is a big deal for Chrome because we hadn't had it. And I use two browsers on a regular basis. I use Internet Explorer because we're Microsoft-based here in the Senate office. We use Outlook and SharePoint and those kinds of things. So IE comes in handy at that point. And I have no problem with IE. But I like the speed of Chrome and the simplicity of it. But the one thing that had been missing were extensions, and they've implemented extensions. Works really well. I have added four extensions so far. I've got a Facebook extension where I can click on a link and a little box pops up and I can see what's going on in my Facebook account. There's an IE tab that I use an extension for that essentially allows me to view any web page rendered as Internet Explorer would render it, because there's sometimes a difference between how Chrome would render a page and how Internet Explorer would. So I don't have to leave Chrome to go over to Internet Explorer to view the page. I can view it right in Chrome. I have something called Chromed Bird. So it's not a real catchy name, but basically it's a Twitter client that I can view the Twitter feeds. It appears as a little button on the toolbar. You just click it, a little window pops up, and you can see your Twitter feeds and actually tweet if you so chose. And then the last one that I've added there, which I'll probably make a pick later on, is once I do a little bit more review of it, is a tool that's been around for a while called Feedly. And that essentially takes your RSS feeds and puts them into kind of a newspaper-style format. So you have one page, and you have lead articles, and you have sub-articles, and you have images sprinkled throughout, and indexes, and those kinds of things. And just kind of a good way to read RSS feeds, especially if you have a lot. It kind of weeds through some of the stuff that's not as interesting, and kind of does a little bit of a rating for you based on your interests. So that's another extension that's available. There's I don't know how many hundreds of extensions are available now, but most of the major ones that you can find in Firefox are now available on Chrome. So if you're a Chrome user, take a look at Chrome extensions.
Very good. I'll have to check those out. I'm a Chrome user for Google Wave.
Yep.
That's what really got me into using Chrome.
Yep.
So.
One of the neat features about Chrome is that you can make any site an application. So you can say, hey, I want this to be kind of its own little standalone application. And you click the button and you get a desktop icon or something in your start menu. And it kind of acts like a web 2.0 application launcher. Works well that way, too. I'm sure the other browsers are going to be doing that because that seems to be a very popular feature.
So is that what you did with your Google Wave?
I haven't done that, but I should. I've been struggling, and I think there's an extension for that, speaking of Wave, in Chrome where you can be notified of new messages, because I don't think of Wave as often as I should, because I'm not real active in discussions there, but I probably should probably leverage that a little bit more.
Yep, actually they have a couple of them. Wave Pop-Up, Wave Unread Navigator.
Okay.
And the most popular download was Google Wave Notifier.
There
so
you go.
Maybe we'll put a link to those in the show notes too.
Cool. All right, community feedback, Sally, what do we got?
Oh, we've heard from lots of people this week. We love it when there's lots of community feedback, starting with Mark Fogatry, who is at Muddy River Media. We mentioned Muddy River last week in the show as being someone who had some Christmas giveaways of various mainly video-oriented media files. I think Muddy River actually has JPEG images that you can use as backgrounds in your PowerPoints and things like that as well.
Mm-hmm.
So we mentioned them last week. He wrote and thanked us for the link to his site and sent us Christmas blessings for this season.
Thanks,
so,
Mark.
Nice to hear from Mark. We had a few people talking to us on Twitter. A few people, you and I and Jason.
Yeah, do we count as community feedback?
I guess we do, because we are out there tweeting as well. I just tweeted a link to the Google blog. Communication and collaboration just got easier with Google Groups blog post. And just updating.
Another, forgotten stepchild of Google is Google Groups, and this is a nice addition.
Right there. Google Groups is basically a way to connect with a group of people around a particular topic or interest, and you have mailing list functionality, you have online discussion boards and things like that, and they've just notched it up with Google Groups. They've got faster setup, searchable archives, various sharing and replying to the group and that kind of thing. So there is a video available. You can get an overview of the updates to Google Groups and check all of that out on this particular blog post.
Great.
And then Jason Schmidt, always reading and sharing things that he thinks would be of interest to the Wells Tech community. He shared a link to an article about conquering technophobia. That was the topic of our show last week, Martin, where we talked about working with those who are afraid of technology for whatever reason and introducing them slowly and that kind of thing. So this is a link to a blog from the Educational Technology Guy, who's a teacher in Connecticut. And you'll want to check out his resources and insights into conquering technophobia.
Mm-hmm.
Jason shared a link to adoptaclassroom.org, which is a place where you can sign up as a teacher and be part of a way that people can adopt and support your classroom with financial support for initiatives you have going on in the classroom. He also shared a link to the Techzilla video podcast. Their episode 502 demonstrated how to read Gmail offline. So there's a new feature in the Google Labs. I guess I'm not sure how new it is, but it's still in Labs, which is kind of their development area at Google, where they test things out, and you can test them out with them kind of at your own risk before they make them really live and integrated with the application. So this is in the Gmail Google Labs, and it allows you to download basically your Gmail. So say you're getting on an airplane or you're going to be somewhere where you're offline and not able to connect, but you want to have your email to be able to read it during that time, you can download those using this Google Lab application. And they demonstrate that on the Techzilla video podcast. So check that out. Mm-hmm. Next up, he shared a link to a free virtual science education conference that's coming up on January 9th. So they have a full day lineup of different science topics. Everything from where do old sneakers go to die to try this at home, fun experiments for your students, all kinds of good science-oriented topics that are going on that day. It's a free online conference.
Yeah, so through Discovery Education, which they produce, I believe they are the same folks, that produce the United Streaming.
Right.
Content. So good stuff. And is there a cost to this?
No, nope,
looking
it's
at
free.
It now. Very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. Should
nine,
be a good
9
day.
9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on a Saturday.
Sure. So, especially if you're science oriented, great conference for you to take part in. And lastly, Jason shared a link to Sugar Software, which read this. I'm going to refresh my memory here. Sugar on a Stick is a Linux application that was basically developed for the One Laptop per Child project. Mm-hmm. So a child-oriented Linux application, and they have upgraded it. They are out with version 2. And so if you are a Linux fan, you may want to check out this new version of Sugar from Sugar Labs.
Yeah, kind of a lightweight, simplified operating system. So could have some uses here, especially for those schools that have some technology challenges, especially with lighter hardware available to them that cannot potentially run some of the more modern operating systems. And this seems to kind of fit the bill for a very straightforward operating system.
Okay, and our next comment actually came from you, Martin. Maybe you want to explain that one.
I got to remember what I said. Oh, yeah, I ran across a nice PowerPoint. Oh, I don't know if it's a PowerPoint presentation, but basically a 50-page slide presentation that really addressed social media. It was entitled Social Media Tactics for Nonprofits. No brain surgery here, just kind of common sense kind of stuff, but a nice presentation, a systematic look at all of the social media outlets like Twitter and Facebook and YouTube and Flickr, and how a nonprofit might take advantage of those and some considerations as you're going in. And I wrote a blog post about this recently as well, that a lot of churches and schools attack social media in, a scattergun fashion, where they're just dipping their toe in the water. They're going to put up a Facebook page because everybody else does. And this really suggests more of a systematic approach, of a planning approach to, which areas are we going to leverage, and how are we going to measure our results, and what's worth investing, time in, and so on and so forth. How do we do this right? So I thought a nicely done presentation. So we'll put a link to that in the show notes, or if you want to read my blog about it, blogs.wells.net/technology is my blog home.
Very good. Thanks for sharing. I think that'll be real timely for us here in Sleepy Eye. We're really revamping our outreach efforts, and as part of that, really looking seriously at our website, and our not just our website, but all of our
web properties. all of your web properties, all your where you can be found on the internet. Right?
That's right. And these are real basic but very useful ways to engage in the social media landscape.
Yep, absolutely.
Good stuff. All right, I'm circling back. We're over on the Digo side of things now. And guess what? Jason and I had things to say over there as well. Jason shared a link to critical thinking skills and education in life. And I believe his comment was these are good, you know, certainly for a teacher to think through, but for all of us, especially in ministry settings, to think through what is critical thinking and why teach critical thinking and, you know, just the logic and ethics of critical thinking. So very good resource there. I'm not sure what the source is, ASA. I don't know what that stands for, but American Society of something, I bet.
Mm-hmm.
So looks like a good article and worth some time and thought, especially if Jason recommends it. So
absolutely.
The two that I shared on Digo were Fresh Brain. I picked this up from a Twitter friend. Fresh Brain is a really neat website, kind of geared toward teens or maybe tweens on up through high school age, where it gives you project ideas for kids to do online. It says, you know, want to shoot and edit your own YouTube video? Here's how you can do that. Want to create a video game? It points them to NetBeans, which is a free Java programming language that you can install. Just, you know, want to build a Facebook app? Here's how you can do it. Things that would engage teenagers, but give them some tools to work with and some how-to behind it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're a tagline says, explore technology areas, connect with other teens, create your own projects, and show off your work. That's what Fresh Brain is all about.
And it's freshbrain.org.
There you go.
Right.
And the other link that I shared was one that I came across, 5K through 12 technology trends. Here we go again, looking ahead to the future. Technology trends for 2010, and this is from an education perspective. So they're talking about things like e-books growing in popularity, netbooks growing in popularity, interactive whiteboards or smart boards growing in popularity, and more. So it's good to look forward to what's coming down the pipe and prepare for those things. And it's also nice to know if you've invested in those technologies that they're going to be continuing to grow and be enhanced in the future.
Great. If you want to share on Digo, if you're a Digo user, how do people do that, Sally?
Well, you know, you can certainly just tag your things with the Wells Tech tag, and we'll pick up anything that has the Wells Tech tag. But we also have a Wells Tech group on Digo,
mm-hmm.
and it's a public group. You can go and join that group, and that will basically mash up all of our picks or tagged items in one area on Digo. So check us out on Digo. We have links in the show notes for that.
Yep, and that tagging approach will work on Twitter as well. #WellsTech will get our attention on Twitter as well.
And not to be ignored, it works on Delicious as well. So
that's right.
Give us a Wells Tech tag on Delicious and we'll find you there as well.
Yep, lots of ways to tag content. And last but not least, we have a listserv conversation going.
Yeah, from our friend Gail Potretz, who is asking about getting started with streaming video. Understanding that they already have a video set up, can they tap into that camera and that those resources to also stream live video via the web? And Gail had one response so far from Heather King, and she more or less was asking some questions, trying to understand more of where Gail was coming from with what she was trying to get set up. But if you have some information that would be useful in the video streaming area, I'm sure Gail and others would appreciate hearing from you on the Wells Tech listserv.
And you get to that by going to our website, wellstech.wells.net. There's all kinds of ways to get in touch with us. That would be one. Or email us, wellstech@wells.net. We have a voicemail line. We'd love to hear your voice at 405-4-WELLS. That's 405-367-9357. We mentioned Twitter. We also have a Facebook page. Love to talk to you there as well. Facebook.com/WellsTech. We're going
to
have a show next.
Get in touch with us.
Oh, yep. We're going to have a show next week, Sally, right?
Yes, we are. It will be the eve of Christmas Eve, and as is our Wells Tech tradition, our second year of Eves of Christmas Eves, we are going to have a shortened show with a special interview.
Right. Mark, last year we interviewed President Mark Schrader. This year we go out to the districts, and we enticed District President and Pastor John Buchholz, who's also a member of the Technology Advisory Committee, to join us for an interview to talk about technology in the Synod and from his vantage point, where he sees things as being, you know, in our congregations. And he has a unique perspective. He spent a number of years up in Microsoft country, up in Washington there, and he's got some unique insights there. So tune in next week. That'll be the entire show, just the interview with John, and we appreciate him joining us for that. And should we close, Sally? I think we've talked enough, haven't we?
I think that was a good way to end it. Yep. So we have some special Christmas music, though.
Yeah, and a new band or a new musical, Wells Music. It's not artist. There's four of them, I guess, called the Branches Band. I'm just pulling up the page here. Andy Brown, Rachel Brown, Jeremy Bakken, and Joel Roush are a part of this. And I think they're all, if I read this right, all former WLC students, either current or former. I think they're all former. They got together and formed this band. I know they have sung for the International Youth Rally this past summer, and they've consented to share their music with our Streams audience and as well as our Wells Tech audience. So we are going to hear their song, Behold the Branch is Growing, from their Christmas album, A Branch is Growing. So enjoy that music, and tune in next week for our interview with John. Thanks for joining us, and have a great week.
Behold the branch is growing of loveliest host form and grace. As prophets sang for knowing, it springs from this flow. at last we pray.